If psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our illustrious panel of shrinks analyze and psychoanalyze what's happening in entertainment and pop culture. I'm Dave Verhagen, a psychologist, author, and bad magician. And our regular panels here, Rachel Kitson is a psychologist. She's also our media darling, who has written all kinds of things for ShrinkTank.com, our biggest articles of all time. And I just said darling. I have no idea why.
Wow.
Rachel, anything you're thinking about or working on these days?
A baby.
I'm working on a baby.
Well, that's all you need to say then. That is what's going on. Frank Gaskell's also here. He's a psychologist and he's the author of the popular Max Gamer graphic novel. He's also our resident insane person. And Frank is usually upset or worked up or excited. One of those words.
Mm-hmm. Just not happy.
Not happy.
Or at peace.
I think I'm looking forward to my spring break. Because I'm going to get on a plane and go to Mexico. But that makes me also a little nervous about my spring break.
Because what if the wall's built and you try to get back?
Right. I don't know if the plane will make it over the wall that Mexico paid for. But I'm a little nervous because I hear you're not supposed to drink water there. And yeah, I'm not, you know, a little concerned. I'm afraid I'll accidentally brush my teeth and protozoa will get into my body.
Yeah. And if so, then what happens?
I will need to change my shorts.
Oh, you'll have bowel issues. That would be something new.
That's a new thing.
Yeah. Right.
Frank will be going to the Big D, and I don't mean Nellis.
You might want to buy brown swim trunks.
And you just heard him. Jonathan Hederle's here. He's a counselor, a critic, and a sarcasm all-star. And each week he follows interesting stories of psychology in pop culture, and we call it Being Human.
So, interesting, the LA Times recently reported that the Matrix director, Lily Wachowski, has come out as transgender, just like her sister, Lana, did before her. Now, Lily Wachowski, the younger half of the Wachowski sibling directing duo, has officially come out as transgender, just like her sister did in 2012. While promoting their film Cloud Atlas. However, one of the interesting kind of side notes of Lily coming out was that she really didn't get to do it on her own timeline. She says she was pushed by a journalist from a British outlet who knocked on her door around dinner time and basically was saying, you know, this is going to come out, so why don't we help, you know, cater the story to be more inspirational.
My takeaway from the article is that genetics matter. DNA is important. But also the sort of the bullying that these people experience and suicides that have happened. I mean, it's pretty sad. But I will have one other spin and on the Wachowski sisters. All this surgery and them working through all this stuff explains why they never made another good movie. I will say that.
Why?
Other than The Matrix.
Why do you say?
They've been busy working on who they are and not on their movies. That's all I'm saying.
That is all you're saying.
Because people can only do either or. They can't do both.
I'd say that'd be pretty consuming. And I'm expecting now that it's all done, we're going to get a really good movie next from the Wachowski brothers. Sisters.
There you go.
Right. Habits.
Bad habits. You mentioned this about being picked on and bullied. And one of the interesting things is when this conversation comes up, one of the things you always hear is, well, this didn't used to be a thing, and now all of a sudden, and there's
it's not all of a sudden.
No, there's no basis for that. And it's just that as we're shedding more light on something and there's more acceptance and freedom, then people are stepping into the open more, and we're also becoming more aware of people's stories more.
Like Asperger's has not suddenly exploded.
Right.
It's been here. Now we're like, oh, that's what that is.
That's what that is, right.
Well, and I hope because they've gotten so much press now, and in a lot of ways, along with Caitlyn Jenner, they really are the face of transgender in Hollywood and in pop culture. I hope that if they have the free rein to decide if they want to use their creativity as a platform to make film and raise awareness, or I hope they feel completely free just to go back to making science fiction, action films, and not feel like their sexuality now has to really dictate and determine what type of projects they're allowed to make and, you know, really limit their creativity.
Yeah, my guess is they're going to go back to what they're good at and their the science fiction groove and the stuff that they're, that's really their wheelhouse. I doubt we're going to see a movement away from that. That's just my guess.
And when you look at their films, there's every single one of them is so all over the map in terms of like sexuality, spirituality, Western, Eastern, you know, pacifism, aggression, violence. Like, to me, it doesn't make sense, but it's not that big of a leap to say they were working through so many internal things with themselves. And in a lot of ways, you get this kind of visual and creative representation on film.
Right. Yeah, I think that is kind of a cool point. I mean, they're constantly challenging the binary. You know, it's not one or the other, you know, looking at the spectrum of human existence. And I think it is really cool that it's artistically portrayed too. And I think it makes for great art and great film.
Good Lord, that sounded intelligent.
that was Brown talk.
You did go to Brown. I'm like, God, big words, there's flow to it. Not a single or a It was almost like you read that. Wow. I'm are you like an art critic?
Do I sound that bad? I guess.
Like boo 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 boo. Like, wow.
Okay. Moving on before Frank digs a really deep hole for himself. Emma Watson recently opened up about her struggles with low self-esteem. So get this. In a recent interview with Esquire UK, the actress and activist opened up about the lapse in confidence that she experienced in her early 20s. She is quoted as saying, as a 21-year-old, she was riddled with insecurity and was self-critiquing herself, such as she didn't like her friends taking photos of her when she wasn't working. And then she realized it was because she couldn't reconcile within herself her own image on the front of these magazines versus when she had gone through all makeup and styling.
Yeah, I think that's just really kind of sad that, you know, she couldn't, the way she was being portrayed in Hollywood and on the red carpet was so unrelatable in her real life, and she kind of rejected her non-Hollywood version of herself and didn't like to have people take pictures of her. And I guess it's great that she was able to mature and step away from that and see that it was kind of a facade. But I mean, it just speaks to sort of the mass produced and kind of highly, you know, airbrushed representation of women and people in Hollywood that we kind of get used to as being the norm.
Speaking of Brown though, right? Isn't she a fellow?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She left Brown for a little while
alone?
And then came back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, this whole story it's made up. There's only one reason her self-esteem crashed. It's because when she was at Brown, she answered a question correctly her freshman year. In the class, some of the people said, 2 points for Gryffindor. And she's like, I can't take it, and ran from the building. And that was the end of her career at Brown.
Now, that would be you anywhere you went.
Did you make that up?
I don't know. It's urban legend. It could be true. I mean, if she was in my class and I answered a question correctly, I would not be able to stop saying, 3 points for Gryffindor. I would not be able to stop that filter.
Right.
No matter what the repercussions, I would have to say that.
But ego depletion, that's not something that exists.
Has to be real.
And willpower.
Wait, does that take ego? What's ego?
Never mind.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't get it.
And with that, we're going to take a break and come back with our trending topic. And this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Available now from Hero House Books. Mixed Shrinks, ridiculous real-life stories from shrinks. Have you ever wanted to read funny stories from a bunch of shrinks? Well, neither have we, but somehow it made it into a book. And it's a great book, too. Shrinks share some of their funniest true-life stories, and we've got some doozies. It's Mixed Shrinks, available now at HeroHousePublishing.com or Amazon. Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen along with Frank the Psych Weasel, Rachel Kitson, and Jonathan Hederle. And our trending topic today is the psychology of March Madness. We're right in the thick of it. It is a hot tournament, as always. Every year you can count on it being a really crazy thing. Every year when you look at your bracket, you're like, that 4 seed cannot possibly be beaten by that 12 or whatever seed. It always...
5-12.
Yeah, or 4-15, I guess, is what the... Mm-hmm. It always ends up with all kinds of upsets. And, of course, this year, not an exception. So here's a cool March Madness fact of the podcast. Did you know that vasectomies apparently increase by 50% in the month of March.
That doesn't make any sense.
Makes a lot of sense. It's, I'm going to lay on the couch with frozen peas between my legs and watch the tournament. It's timed. It's like, here I go. I'm gonna just hang out for the whole week or weekend.
It gives you permission to be lazy for a long period of time.
People who watch.
No. It's most people are born in the spring, right?
Yes, most people are born in the spring. You're confusing two facts.
And no, this is what happens. Most people are born in the spring. And we'll take like Jefferson, for example. Jefferson's like, oh, hey, man, pregnancy, that's pretty tough. Don't really want to go through that again. And so right before the baby's born.
What is happening? What is happening?
You get a vasectomy. It's like the dads are like, that, I can't do this again.
I've always wanted to hear Frank's theories on vasectomies because that's just what's been lacking in my life. I don't know how I made it this far.
I really am looking for the ejector button. I mean, I just, like, is there like a button that the floor falls away and there's like crocodiles in it? Like,
where are the hidden cameras?
Wow-wee.
It's true.
That's something else. All right. So in this tournament, let me ask you guys who you predict to win. And why? Frank, start.
Well, prior to making the cover of Sports Illustrated, I figured UNC would do it. And I am praying that the Tar Heels will beat the Sports Illustrated curse and take the championship. But we shall see.
Okay. Jonathan?
Well, I'm picking more with my heart than my head, because this really is a year it is wide open. I think this was a record year for the number of number one teams, so clearly there was not a dominant team that's a fan favorite or critics' favorite. But I chose North Carolina primarily because of its senior experience and leadership. And, I mean, this is it for them. This is their one chance to really kind of go out with a bang, because, quite honestly, I think they've underperformed in the last number of years.
Right. Rachel?
I'm going to go with Carolina, too. I'm just looking at some brackets now. I mean, I'm a Carolina alumni, so tend to lean that way, and Jonathan makes a good case, so I'll go on the coattails of that.
All right. We are recording a little bit early, so there could be changes as we talk about all this stuff after we record. But I, even though I went to Carolina, and that is my sentimental favorite, and I would love for them to win, I'm going to pick Kansas.
I have them in the final.
I think it's
I think it's
Kansas and Carolina as the final two. That's my guess.
And you have Kansas winning where I have Carolina
right.
winning.
And I would love for Carolina to win, but if I think this is when I usually go wrong on Oscar predictions, it's because I go with what I like and what's my sort of emotional connection. And so I'm going to try to not do that and not go with Carolina, and I'll say Kansas. Although I'd love it for Carolina. Now, I will tell you, I think if a number two seed wins, it will be likely Michigan State.
Michigan State.
That's going to be my guess.
They were a borderline number one seed.
Yeah, they're right on it. And I think they're a really strong team, really stacked. All right, so let me ask you guys, with this whole thing, this is something that over the years we've seen probably in the last, I'm going to say 15 years maybe, the level of interest in the tournament has just increased and increased and increased.
Oh, yeah.
And so it increases for a lot of reasons. We want to get into the psychology of that. But first I want to ask you guys, what's the psychology or the appeal of picking brackets? You know, why do we do that? Everybody here in the office has done it. Everybody, my friends have done it. My Facebook friends. Why do we do it? What's the psychology of that?
Well, I know people are loyal to their NFL teams, and we do, you know, fantasy football and stuff like that. But there's something different about picking your college teams, because there's this loyalty that's stuck back when you were 18, 19 years old. So there's, I think, even more of an emotional connection for a wider audience of all these people who have gone to college, and you've had that shared experience of going to the games and having all those memories. And so this is another way to recreate that with your friends and talk trash against other other conference competitors.
You know, maybe relating to the popularity of it, you know, more people are just going to college these days too, and that's a personal connection you have.
And failing out too, by the way.
Right, but you know, still, people will you know, bleed for their school if there's a, you know, if they have a team that's playing in March Madness. So I think, you know, just people like to consider the odds and root for their some place they have a personal connection.
I think there's a few things. I think number one, unlike professional sports, the emotional connection to where there's a purity, even if it's mostly fabricated. Like, these are amateurs. Not only are they amateurs, but a lot of the fans are college-age kids. To see the celebration when they win, there's just this joy, this unbridled joy that you don't always see in professional sports, but also the heartache when you see a team lose, especially like seniors or others, that this is the last time they're ever going to play that sport in front of that kind of crowd, because there's most of them don't go on to professional careers. So you see the elation or the heartbreak. But the other is the David and Goliath component, the underdog, to see somebody that's favored, to see a big powerhouse school get taken down by this small little school that nobody's heard of.
You mean UNC Wilmington beating Duke in the first round? Is that what you're referring to? Is it Baylor beating Duke in the second round?
I have
one of those two.
I have Wilmington beating Duke, and I have Asheville beating a number two as well.
Very good call.
By the time this airs, you'll
I'll know if,
either be right or wrong.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Duke will not make it out of the first week. They will lose the first one or the second. Guarantee it.
You know this is recorded, right?
Yeah, I will bet a lot of money right now, and I will also bet you, Indiana, they're getting beat by number 12. They are going to get slammed by Chattanooga because they're like, we're a higher seed, and they're going to come in all like, well, let's just beat them to that team, and Chattanooga is going to hand them their teeth.
Well, let me. I like what Jonathan's saying, especially about the emotional intensity of it, the highs and the lows. I think it makes for a good story. You know, it's like there are these stories that we're following, not just these teams. And you're following teams because you have emotional connection, but you're also following these stories of a Cinderella team, or you're following stories of a team that's predicted to go all the way and may or may not. The emotional highs and lows. If a senior doesn't win or doesn't place in the Final Four, it's his last chance, all that kind of stuff. But when it gets down to us with picking brackets, doesn't it really, if you pick well, doesn't it mean you were just lucky? I mean, isn't that, I mean, from year after year, if you're picking based on your head only, and it's just pure science or close enough probability, you're not going to do as well as than if you just right. were some, like have an octopus pick it like they do in Vegas or whatever, you know, it doesn't mean you're just lucky. And like, what's the appeal
of that?
Of course
it does.
Yeah. So why do we get all worked up about
because
our brackets?
When I do my bracket, it's not luck. When other people, it's like,
when pure, they do it, it's luck. And when you do it, it's not.
It's pure, manifest
it's
destiny.
It's pure skill, man. It's skill.
But that's the fun part, is when you do well, you like to posture and say like, I cracked the formula. Mm-hmm. And then when you don't, it's like, this is stupid. It's completely random. It doesn't matter anyways.
Didn't like Berkshire Hathaway guy, didn't he put up $1 million for somebody who does a perfect bracket?
A perfect 16.
A perfect
not
16.
Even a perfect
not
bracket.
Even, he just a perfect 16.
Yeah.
And nobody ever wins it.
I don't think so.
I mean, there's some teams who traditionally always do well, though. And if you put them in there, you're probably going to have pretty good odds. I mean,
nope.
Obviously there's upsets. Oh, come on. Like, not like consistently, like, but, you know, Kansas and Carolina have been up there for Carolina and Duke are always contenders. And
Duke's not. They're not.
They've won tons of championships.
Not tons. No.
But it really is arbitrary. And it's fun then to hear why people. I mean, I think that's one of the fun things about brackets is like, what was your criteria? And you hear people like, oh, I like their mascots, or oh, I like their colors, or I like the name, or I know somebody that went to that school. And then you're like, and you beat my bracket where I looked into, you know, I read the analysis and star players and point guard play and the 5-12 rule that there's always a 12 that upsets a 5. Like, somebody can say, I picked schools that had animals as mascots, and they probably will do well in mm-hmm. the long run.
But it is interesting, like you said, when you do well, and I've had a couple of years, I think, where I've either come in first or second in the group that I was with, and you think that you're responsible for it. You know what I mean? Like you attribute.
But you are.
You attribute skill to it.
But you did.
But you didn't.
You did.
You guessed.
Well, I think that's the cool thing about sports. Because
when you look at a 5-12, you're like, which bracket am I going to pick?
You just 12 do on? Your research and you're right.
No, I don't know.
Yes.
I think it's like Jonathan says. I think sometimes it's just, I like the team uniform, or I like that name, or I always vote for Gonzaga, which I always do.
I have controlled the outcome of Carolina games this year.
With your mind?
When I wear my Carolina pants and or watch a whole game, so they win.
So 6 times you were walking around pantless, and those are the games they lost this season?
That's right.
That's part of the appeal of sports, too, is, I mean, you've got, it draws both people who like stats and numbers and hard facts, but then it also has this kind of mystical, superstitious appeal that, you know, drives neurotic fans and players alike. I mean, I think it's just a cool combination of all of those things.
I'm looking at Obama's picks online, and some of them are great, but he's kind of a disaster. He thinks, like, Michigan State is going to beat Syracuse. That's insane.
No, it's not insane. Are.
Yes, it is.
Michigan State's going to make the Final Four.
No, they're not. No, they're not. They will not.
They will.
I'll bet you $20 right now they will not make the Final
20
Four.
$20.
Are we betting right now?
Yeah.
There it goes. All right. I saw the handshake.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think that's such a disaster of a
pick.
Have
you guys seen Syracuse play?
And by the way, obviously we're recording a little bit early, so by the time people are listening to this, they will know who won that bet.
Yeah, and they will know that Hederle just gave me $20. You guys haven't even watched a single Syracuse game, and I bet you haven't watched a Michigan State game. Neither one of you.
That's not true. On either
Who'd
attempt.
You watch?
I watched both. And Michigan State just won the Big Ten championship. And they were
Big Ten sucks.
Most people were talking about they deserved a number one seed over Virginia that didn't win the regular season or the ACC tournament.
Oh my God.
But I don't know what I'm talking about.
You went to Carolina? You're insane. God. UVA, they're a bunch of drug addicts. They are.
And the wheels are coming off.
Man,
Michigan State,
where's my
players,
little ejector seat again?
Michigan State players, they're paid.
Get off my lawn, addict.
Well, you know, I had this insight about the whole tournament as I was thinking about this that is so obvious, but I don't know why it just occurred to me. And that is, I was thinking, why is this so big, right? I mean, next to Super Bowl in the U.S., this is probably the big sporting thing. And I realized it's because you have 64 teams in the Super Bowl, essentially, right? It's kind of like you've got 64 teams that all have a fan base that all think they got a shot and are all into it. And so just that's an exponential number. Then you've got this sort of like it's down to these two. It gets down to the two, but the whole thing as a tournament, you're in from the beginning. Like if you're a UNC Asheville fan, you're like, this is crazy. We never make the tournament and we're in, you know, and you're in.
Yeah. And let's say they only win one game. For them, if they take down a higher seed, that's a successful season. Like not very many sports, like you end the season losing and it's considered a real success. But the other is, this is just as much about tracking who you want to lose. You know, so there's teams like obviously Duke is a prime example, but there's some teams you're just like, I want you to be the upset. I want you're going in, you're kind of arrogant, you're overconfident, and I want a little David to take down that Goliath.
Well, and that little team that beats a big team, they just change their recruiting season for 2 or 3 years. They can say, yeah, I took somebody to the NCAAs.
Yeah, and like you said, it changes the recruiting season. It also changes that whole university.
Yeah, I remember Gonzaga's basketball team used to suck, and now they are a powerhouse and have been for a long time.
It puts the whole university on the map.
Yeah,
it instills pride in the student body, but it also it becomes a point of recruitment for the whole university. So it's a big deal.
When I was a kid, I was the person in charge of bringing a portable TV to school, and we took the TV from class to class to class, and that's all we did was watch the NCAA tournament. No schooling, we just sat and watched.
You had to bring a toy to have friends?
Pretty much.
One last thing I want to ask about that we've already touched on, and that is the David and Goliath thing, and why is it that we tend to vote for these Cinderella teams or root for these Davids, these little teams, these 15 seeds. what is it about that that appeals to us psychologically, and why do we like to do that? Even when we're not necessarily opposed to the number two seed or number one seed, what is it about that? Why do we like to do it?
There's a part of us that's just, I think, wired for underdogs. Just that capability. I mean, it's so inspiring. There's not that much inspiration in meeting the expectations. But that idea of somebody that really has no business winning and yet somehow is able to find it within them to play against the big boys, multi-million dollar coaches and facilities and blue chip recruits. And then you have four-year players that are not going to go anywhere after their careers. And a lot of times, here's the other thing about Goliaths, especially in NCAA basketball, they tend to play as a team, whereas the powerhouses oftentimes have pro prospects. And a lot of times it's a great player that drives those big teams, whereas when you watch Gonzaga, especially in the earlier years, and just the fundamentals and the teamwork, you had no superstars, but everybody played together. So even the watching the basketball itself was a much more pleasurable experience, at least for me.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with more of the Shrink Tank podcast right after this. Available now from Hero House Books, Cinemanalysis by Craig Pohlman and Josh Jensen. Cinemanalysis connects films to psychology through double features. These are movies paired because they share striking amounts of cinematic DNA, as if they were separated at birth. Each chapter describes a double feature, including why the movies can be appreciated more by viewing them together. Then psychological ideas are illustrated through the paired films. Pick up Cinemanalysis at HeroHousePublishing.com or Amazon.com. And welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen along with Frank the Psych Weasel, Rachel Kitson, and Jonathan Hederle. And we're going to wrap it up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're enjoying in popular culture. And Jonathan has something for us today. Jonathan?
Well, recently I had to get an emergency root canal, so I was sort of out of commission for a few days, just laying in bed, and I've just decided I'm just going to watch movies that I know my wife doesn't care to watch. And then it was all movies I'd seen before, and I just wanted to see could they retain their, you know, the quality of it. And this is maybe the fourth time I've watched this movie, but again, I watched The Raid 2, and let me tell you, that movie
holds up
on so many levels. It's a beautifully shot movie. It's tense. It's exhilarating. It is the godfather of martial arts action flicks. I cannot recommend it more to anybody else.
I concur. I definitely second that. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk or like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank Podcast. And of course, you can check us all out on shrinktank.com and find all kinds of cool articles and videos about all kinds of cool things in pop culture. Our audio wizard and engineer is Zach Brown. For Rachel Kitson, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell, I'm Dave Verhagen. Have a great week.